Hello, it's Misty and Risky, and I'm going to be doing day number 16 of my MXTX Topa prompts, and it is Jade. That's my prompt for today. And I have found another Modazusha fic, because I felt like, obviously, twin Jades of Lan, there has to be Jade. And I think I found a pretty good fic. I think it has a lot to do with the prompt, so I'm excited. But yeah, so this is part of a challenge that I'm doing for the whole of October for spooky, even though it's, I guess, they're not always as spooky as intended, but just know I mean them in a spooky way. Yeah, so they are cold reads, so they're a bit more informal. I'm not going to be doing as much editing, or I might speak in the middle of it, depending on the mood. Some of them have been quite, either moving or dramatic or whatever, so I don't want to disrupt the flow, but on the more comedic ones I might speak more. But yeah, so, and I follow a line of prompts from an Instagram page doing MXTXtober, which I will link in the notes. And yeah, also, slight disclaimer, I am trying my best with the Chinese pronunciation, but please let me know if I get anything wrong. I am basically just replaying Google Translate and trying to copy it. But yeah. The fic I have chosen is Truth Hurts by Eleanor_Fenix, I think. Please let me know if your name's pronounced differently, and yes, I will remember it. Summary. In the middle of the Sunshot campaign, Long Wong Ji finds a strange jade carving that seems to have an energy of its own. And while it doesn't seem to be malicious, its purpose is a mystery. Meanwhile, Wei Wuxian is desperately trying to hide how close he is to falling to pieces on an hourly basis, but for some reason he can't stop himself from telling Long Wong Ji the truth. Well, he could, but it's agony to try. Author's notes. For Human Corn. Dear Lamp, I hope this Sunshot campaign angst qualifies as fun cursed object shenanigans. Thanks so much for donating. I hope you enjoy your gift. Hangwon Jun! It takes a few beats longer than it should for Long Wong Ji to turn and spot whoever had called for him. The title is new, and he's wary from a battle still soaking the hems of his robes red, in spite of the cleaning talismans woven into them. He thinks he can be excused the momentary lapse. When he does turn to look, it comes with a strange, detached sort of vertigo, as he sees a small contingent of Lan cultivators clearly having just arrived on the field, their robes still a proper gleaming white, and not a hair out of place, despite their flight that the last few are just touching down from. Is this what people feel when he arrives on the battlefield with his own command? Some strange urge in him longs to smear a bloody, muddied handprint across all that gleaming white, just to feel less filthy himself. But of course, that's ridiculous. Those just arriving sheathe their swords immediately. There isn't a single fleck of blood to stain the blades, so why shouldn't they? Bichen drips a sluggish, red-black, congealing glob into the churned-up mud beneath his boots, and Long Wong Ji knows he won't be sheathing his own blade for hours. Not until he has the luxury of sitting down somewhere safe long enough to clean and oil it properly. He pushes the discomfort of the prospect away with the ease of much practice. We found an abandoned manor, near enough to walk if necessary. It's sheltered from the wind, and the walls are sturdy enough to maintain a ward without expending too much of our own energy. Ugh, of course they aren't stained from battle. It would seem the scouting party that was sent out 3 days ago to find medium-term shelter for this leg of the campaign has finally returned. Provisions? The kitchens have rice enough for all that seems suitable, and the well still runs clear. It will be easy to supplement our remaining rations. It's likely the best they could hope for, and quite frankly, Long Wong Ji isn't sure how much longer he can continue like this, sleeping in the open, on churned and muddy ground, worried every minute of the day and night that they're going to be attacked again, that he'll lose more comrades in arms just to fight their corpses mere minutes later. Though, naturally, he'll never let his exhaustion show. It'll have to work.
Lead. We will follow.
The order passes quickly through the small group Long Wong Ji leads personally, and then further to the rest of their forces. Not just Lan, but the Nie and Jiang contingents as well. Though all under the command of captains rather than their sect leaders. Once word has been spread to all who need to hear it, they form up in loose ranks and follow the scouts through the forest, weary ears alert for the sound of more fierce corpses or of Wen troops stopping to make camp themselves. They arrive at the promised manor without incident, and Long Wong Ji spares a few moments and a portion of qi to wash away the worst of his exhaustion long enough to see everyone settled. They'll camp here for a few days at least, to recover now that they've cleared the latest round of puppets. To pursue the Wen forces directly is too dangerous with their current numbers, which means they must wait for more puppets to be made and sent to try to force them back from the borders of Wen territory. Their only job, to hold the line rather than gain the army any extra ground. Though the respite is as temporary as when Rohan's whims will dictate, there's a clear atmosphere of relief, as places amongst the rooms and gardens are divvied up with surprisingly little argument. Fires are lit, and the evening meal prepared by the first round of cultivators to have washed themselves, and as the rest bathe and change out of their blood-soaked clothes, they come to eat, and take over the doling out of the meal to the next round, the first retiring either to their beds or to the first watch along the new wards. Long Wong Ji, assured that the camp is running smoothly without his guidance, is about to retire and finally attempt to find a suitable bath for himself when a quiet voice stops him.
Han Guangjun, pardon the intrusion. This one has a request.
It's one of the scouts from earlier, not the leader, but someone that Long Wong Ji knows personally from his classes, that seem as if they happened a small eternity ago. The boy, and he is just a boy, the youngest of those who once attended Long Wong Ji's advanced music cultivation lectures with him, holds out his hand palm up, to show him a piece of carved white jade, so fine it seems to glow faintly in the fading evening light. The nearest torch staked into the ground flickers in a wisp of a breeze, and the carving seems to move with it, shadows shifting and stretching like a simple trick of the eye before the light settles again. It would almost be possible to believe the illusion was simply that, were it not for the faint hum of energy radiating from the jade, even without probing it with his own.
"We found this hidden in a sandalwood box in the master's room," the boy whispers. "It's Lan. The box bears our insignia, and the craftsmanship is unmistakable. But we could not discern its function beyond the sense of some type of spirit lurking in it. This one requests Han Guangjun's expert assistance."
"I will examine it,"
he agrees, curiosity piqued despite his exhaustion. His former classmate, whose name has slipped from his mind like water, but whose familiar presence is comforting anyway, hurries to wrap the carving in warded silk. It feels warm even through the cool fabric, and when Long Wong Ji pockets it, he tests it with a thread of qi that resonates with a louder answering hum, like a plucked guqin string. though the reply, if it is one, feels benign enough to only interest him further rather than cause alarm. They make camp and rest for 4 days, but on the morning of the 5th, a fresh fight begins in earnest with the garbled cries of swarming puppets surrounding the manor on all sides, and Long Wong Ji is no closer to solving the mystery of his strange new treasure. He carries it in a jiangkun pouch, tucked into the front of his robes, as they allow themselves to be harried back towards the main force at a last-minute order from Nie Mingzhe, a feint to draw the enemy troops and their puppets closer to the main body of the army that has been advancing towards their position for the last week. When their frantic fight is interrupted, when their frantic flight is interrupted by the main body of the Jiang forces arriving to sweep in like the blow of a hammer against Lung Wong Ji's anvil, the Wen soldiers and fierce corpses caught in the middle to be crushed, the minor, unimportant puzzle of the jade pressed warm and steady against his chest is the furthest thing from his mind. Reader's note. Ooh, this is exciting. I don't know if I've read many, like, mid-sunshot, grizzled Long Wong Ji, but it's exciting. I like exploring this. As is always the case in these skirmishes, for a long time the only thing Wei Wuxian is aware of is the screaming of the damned and the piercing cry of his Chenqing adding her voice to the din. The loudest and coldest voice carrying across the battlefield to better call the others to his banner. It rings in his ears for longer and longer after every battle, and he knows that his eyes fade to their usual white and strange silver more slowly every time he fights. Their own disciples hardly seem to notice this evidence of his demonic cultivation, so grateful they are for his help and the power he lends to the Jiang, who are so new, so untrained. Other sects aren't so quick to look the other way on the rare occasions they don't manage to give him a wide berth, but for now, he thinks, no one has dared to speak out against him openly. Well, that isn't quite true, but to be spoken of by Lung Wong Ji is an honour in and of itself, even for censure. He doesn't know when the Lan forces arrived in this ravine he's been told to mind. The battle is nothing but a blur of screaming agony. Others, his own, he doesn't know the difference anymore. And the metallic cloy of clotted, rotting blood in his mouth and the back of his nose. Long gone are the days of sandalwood incense and magnolia blooms on the breeze, but Long Wong Ji is here anyway, and that's truly the most important thing. The battle ends in victory, as battles always do when he takes the field. Though Wei Wuxian doesn't ever receive the same awed gratitude for his help that Lan Xichen does, the great Zewu Jun with his reputation for turning the tide every time he appears. It's fair, he supposes, and it isn't as if he's here to demand their bowing and scraping anyway. There's only one person whose good opinion he cares for. Wu Ying. His friend, his partner, his Zhiji calls, concern barely hinted at in the depths of his gaze. It must not be the first time he's called for him. Lanjian? He asks, and finds that it rasps in his aching throat. Clearing it will only bring up stale blood, so he refrains. When did you... He coughs anyway, and barely manages to keep the bloody bile in his throat where it belongs. Wu Ying, what is wrong? Wrong? Nothing's wrong. Long Wong Ji is here. What could possibly be wrong? It's all right, one of the voices in his head croons, such a welcome reprieve from the screams. You can go to him. The permission is ridiculous.
He's never been able to truly avoid Lang Wangji, and he's never truly wanted to try all that hard to do so either. Still, ridiculous and unnecessary as it is, Wei Wuxian is pathetically grateful for it. Lang Wangji is glaring at him, all he ever seems to do these days. But the ghosts would warn him if Lang Wangji were about to kill him, wouldn't they? Their grasp of time is slippery. They would be screaming in rage as if he'd already died if Lang Wangji were going to run him through with Bi Qian's pretty white blade and add to the blood splatters drying on the leading edge.
"You're here,"
he rasps. His next step is a stumble, but Lang Wangji's hands don't quite extend far enough to catch under his elbows, so he rights himself with an effort. Curbing his tongue turns out to be too much effort to bother with.
"I want you here. You should be here, Lan Zhan, huh? Not in some muddy field somewhere else. You should...
"Stay with me," dies in his throat as he spits out the blood clot in his throat, grimacing around the texture on his tongue and the wet splat of the pathetic little glob in the dirt.
"Ugh, sorry," he grunts. He wipes a hand against his bloodied chin and tries to smile,
but Lang Wangji's glare doesn't budge at all, and he realizes his pink-edged teeth, which he can only assume are paired with demon-red eyes, probably don't make for the most reassuring image.
"You are unwell,"
Lang Wangji says, the stiffest understatement of the century. Wei Wuxian barks a laugh, humorless and short.
"Ai-ya, Lan Zhan, don't be silly. Never been worse."
"Better. Never been better. Why the hell did he say worse?" Lang Wangji's gaze somehow sharpens in the way that cuts everyone but Wei Wuxian, who only feels it like the exhilarating rush of flying on his sword too recklessly for others' comfort. Seeing as he can't have that one anymore, he'll just have to content himself with continuing to chase the other whenever he can bear it. Getting close to Lang Wangji is like sticking his hand into an open flame to try to warm the perpetual chill he can't shake anymore. Excruciating bliss.
"Wei Ying,"
Lang Wangji calls, and it rings somehow, an echoing gong in his ears and in his mind. He shakes his head vigorously, earning himself another dizzy spell that only passes after he's taken two more steps forward, thoroughly in Lang Wangji's personal space now. But that's allowed, isn't it? That's okay, so long as it makes the screams stop. He can go to him.
"Lan Zhan, I think there's something wrong. What have you..."
"Hey!" The shout comes with the smell of ozone and an ominous crackling that still straightens Wei Wuxian's spine entirely on instinct. It also serves to break whatever strange compulsion has him standing a mere hand's breadth away from Lang Wangji, who's watching him approach like a hawk, seconds away from diving into the grass after a mouse. Wei Wuxian stumbles back a step, and then another, and as the distance grows, so do the screams, strangely muted but quickly strengthening again as he gets some space.
"How many times do I have to tell you, Lan O Gongzi? Stay out of Jiang Clan business, or else the next time will not be a warning,"
Jiang Cheng demands, sneering as he practically spits at Lang Wangji. Wei Wuxian wants to tell him to stop, but his ears are ringing and the dizziness is back in full force, his head swimming with screams that can't actually be there, as no one else seems to be reacting to them, and that's usually a good way to judge what's real. Wei Wuxian throws his arm around Zheng Cheng's shoulders as if to jostle him out of his mood, and he's pretty sure only he knows that he actually just needs the help to keep standing upright.
"Ai-ya, Zheng Cheng, I started talking to him. Don't bully poor Lan Zhan, ah? Come on, he's brought back our
are Shidime, all safe and sound for us. Let's go greet them.
As far as excuses go, it's one of his better ones, as it's something that genuinely needs doing. But Zheng Cheng still takes it with poor grace. That's fine. All that matters is that he does listen, and that he drags Wei Wuxian away from Lan Wangji with no small amount of force. It feels like the only way he'll be able to leave Lan Wangji's general vicinity. Wei Wuxian can't sleep. That isn't new. He hasn't been a good sleeper for most of their lives, but it's different tonight, somehow. Zheng Cheng lies awake on the other side of their tent, listening to his brother thrash and twist in his bedroll like a man possessed, though he's eerily quiet about it. If Zheng Cheng were sleeping, it wouldn't be enough to wake him, even as on edge as they all are in the midst of the battlefield. But he'd laid awake for some time after they'd blown out the lanterns, unable to stop thinking about what their next move is likely to be now that the army is together again. And now he's listening to Wei Wuxian in the throes of some silent sort of agony. He can't let his brother pass the entire night like this. Who knows how many times this has happened when Zheng Cheng had been too exhausted to hear him.
Wei Wuxian.
Sorry, Wei Wuxian gasps immediately, rasping and thick. Zheng Cheng is off his pallet like an arrow from a bow, crossing their tent in a few long strides to drop to his knees beside Wei Wuxian's shivering form. He's mumbling, "I'm sorry, Acheng, I'm sorry," a senseless litany tumbling from clumsy lips. His eyes are blood red again, in the faint glow of the strip of moonlight sneaking in between the closures at the front of the tent. Zheng Cheng uses a flash of qi to light the lantern hanging from the central pole, and once he can see, he dares to look away from Wei Wuxian's gaunt face, only to find his limbs wreathed in ribbons of resentment, cold enough to leave his skin chafed and raw wherever his inner robe has been pulled or pushed aside in his thrashing.
"What the fuck is going on?" he demands,
but as always, his brother won't answer him. He reaches out with one skeletal hand, and the weakness of it scares Zheng Cheng more than anything else yet. Wei Wuxian clings to everything he can get his hands on, like a limpet, impossible to shake off until he's ready to let go, and absolutely no sooner. Zheng Cheng can tell he's using every ounce of strength he has to cling to his wrist, but an infant would cling more strongly to a finger than what Wei Wuxian is currently managing.
"Lan Zhan,"
Wei Wuxian gasps, and Zheng Cheng can't keep the snarl off of his face.
"He did something to you earlier. I fucking knew it."
"No, he wouldn't." Wei Wuxian's frantic denial cuts off with a wet cough into his own shoulder, and Zheng Cheng can't pretend he doesn't see the dark stain he leaves on his red underrobe, not nearly as good at hiding stains as his many layers of black.
"Take me to him. Please, he can help. I need him." "I'm not carrying you through the camp like this."
Zheng Cheng balks at the very thought. Wei Wuxian's position in the army is already tenuous at best, and while their own people are the most forgiving of his new eccentricities, entering the Lan camp with a demonic cultivator clearly losing control of himself and his cultivation is a good way to get his brother hurt before anyone would even think to offer their help. But at the same time, he can't do nothing. Wei Wuxian sobs just once, nothing more than a broken-hearted exhale that ends on another pathetic cough, too weak to accomplish much of anything.
"I'll bring him here,"
he promises, if only to never hear his brother make that sound ever again.
"Jiajia is in the medical tents. I can send her here while I go."
"No, don't. Just Lan Zhan."
Wei Wuxian's glassy, red-tinged eyes finally stop roaming around the demons only he can see to fix on Zhang Cheng's. It doesn't make him feel any better. Just Lan Zhan, A Cheng, please, no one else. All right. Zhang Cheng has never been able to deny either of his siblings anything, really, and tonight is no different. All right, I'll get him. Just stay here. Wei Wuxian doesn't even bother to reply. They both know he's not going anywhere when he's curled in on himself in agony, limbs twisted around himself, and his fingers crooked into rigid claws tearing at his own clothes and bedding. Zhang Cheng throws on a single outer robe for the sake of propriety, and then, uncaring that he's breaking camp rules, takes off on his sword, though he at least stays low to the ground to avoid alarming the boundary sentries. The Lan contingent are on the other side of the camp from the Zhang, the entirety of the Nie forces and the small Jin contingent behind them. It's at least an hour's walk from the inner edge of the Zhang to that of the Lan, only slightly faster by horse, and that only so long as the lanes aren't crowded with cultivators moving between their tents and their duties. Zhang Cheng alights in front of Long Wang Ji's snow-white tent, a mere quarter of an incense stick after he left. It's unwise to ignore the prescriptions for sleep when not required. It's unwise and more difficult than he'd expected as well, Long Wang Ji's body yearning for sleep even as he forces himself to focus. He's no closer than before to solving the mystery of the artifact the scouts had found at the manor, but whatever it is had reacted strangely this afternoon to Wei Wuxian's presence, and he needs to know why. He feeds the carving a delicate thread of qi for the better part of a sijian, but it stays inert in his palm. He is just standing to retreat behind his guqin to attempt to speak to it through inquiry when he turns, Bi Qian flying to his hand before he's even consciously aware of what's disturbed him. The hilt collides with another sword with a muted clang, but before he can go any further to take advantage of the opening the clumsy defence has left for him, he realises who's decided to disturb him in his own tent. "It's Wuxian," Zhang Wanyin says, eyes so wide they're ringed with white all the way round. "He's asking for you. Something's wrong." "Go, I will follow." Zhang Wanyin darts back out as Long Wang Ji turns to scoop his guqin into the changkun pouch in his sleeve, and then he's out on the path and stepping onto Bi Qian, following the purple smudge through the darkened camp, through the white and blue tents of the Lan, the small cluster of gold before the straight, neat rows of grey and green Nie. Zhang Wanyin slows somewhat when they reach the tiny knot of the Zhang's amethyst tents, many still glowing faintly from within as their owners move back and forth between the silk and their lanterns. But there are thankfully no late wanderers out, roaming through the lanes of the camp to see them in their headlong flight. Zhang Wanyin's tent is, unsurprisingly, at the very centre of the small Zhang encampment, though it's no larger nor more intricate than those around it, to avoid making it an obvious target for ambush. Long Wang Ji steps off Bi Qian and strides into the structure, immediately struck by the overwhelming tang of blood in his nose and resentful energy rubbing up against his spiritual senses even before he orients himself enough, to find Wei Wuxian in his tangled nest of blankets and discarded outer robes pulled haphazardly over himself for warmth. He barely notices Zhang Wanyin's tense, summer, thunder-headed presence, his entire being focused on Wei Wuxian, looking as much like a corpse as any of the puppets he and Wen Rohan command.
"Wei Ying."
Wei Ying's voice is barely more than a croak, and yet still somehow holds an audible smile as he calls back, "Lan Zhan, you're here." He doesn't say, of course. He doesn't say, I would come whenever you called. Oh, wait, this is... He doesn't say, of course. He doesn't say, I would come whenever you called. He doesn't say anything at all, as there are no words he knows small enough for comfort that are also large enough to encompass everything he's feeling. He goes to his knees beside Wei Wuxian, and from so close, the exhaustion etched into every line of his gaunt, handsome face is painfully clear. His hair is limp and stringy with sweat, his eyes so bloodshot as to appear red, his lips as white as bone. He has somehow still mustered up the energy to smile at him, tremulous and almost too small to see, but it's there.
You have something you shouldn't, Lanjian, he rasps. Naughty, naughty. What are you walking around with a cursed amulet for,
What the fuck are you talking about? Zheng Wenyin barks. You can't just accuse Han Guangjun.
How do you know?
Long Wangji interrupts. He has little patience for Zheng Wenyin's theatrics at the best of times, which this is very much not.
I did not know it's cursed.
Long Wangji stays perfectly still as Wei Wuxian reaches out with one pale hand to brush a fingertip right over where the jade carving is tucked into the breast of his robes.
It's talking to me,
he whispers, barely audible. He punctuates it with a grimace, and the flicker of his pained gaze towards Zheng Wenyin in the next moment feels like a signal.
Leave us,
he says, implacable, and without taking his eyes off Wei Wuxian's ghost of a relieved smile.
I will help him.
This is my tent, Long Wangji.
And Wei Ying's.
It's okay, Zheng Zheng,
Wei Wuxian rasps, still smiling with pink teeth. Long Wangji wonders how much blood he's lost on the battlefield that no one has thought to look for, as it doesn't come from the edge of a blade, except for the one he turns on himself with his own cultivation.
Lanjian's here.
Whatever Zheng Wenyin snarls in argument falls on deaf ears as Long Wangji busies himself with looking Wei Wuxian over for injuries that would explain the reek of blood on him, and he notes it with only the smallest portion of his attention when Zheng Wenyin storms out of the tent in a flurry of anger that doesn't hide his fear the way he likely hopes it does. On principle, Long Wangji refuses to sympathize. The moment they're alone, Long Wangji has to brace himself against the weight of Wei Wuxian, clutching at the front of his robes to leverage himself up off the sleeping pallet, his breathing labored. Long Wangji hurries to assist, without worrying first that it would be as unwelcome as all his previous attempts to help. But thankfully, Wei Wuxian says nothing at all in protest, and Long Wangji is allowed to curl his hands under his knobbly elbows and feel, for the first time, how truly skeletal he's become.
Can I hold it?
Wei Wuxian asks, with a glance down at the spot where the amulet is sitting, nestled between the layers of his robes. Long Wangji nods and tries not to squirm as Wei Wuxian just reaches into his robes to grab it for himself, moving with a sort of contained desperation that ends the moment his fingers wrap around the unnaturally warm jade.
Dead.
Long Wangji jolts, startled by the voice like a gong in his mind. Wei Wuxian stiffens as well, going perfectly still with his hands in Long Wangji's robes, and his entire body trembling faintly with either cold or pained exhaustion, it's difficult to tell.
Wei Ying?
It's cursed, he mumbles, his blood-red eyes glassy and unfocused. It's going to make me... It's like...
Speak.
This time, Long Wangji doesn't jump, but Wei Wuxian does, jerking in place like a slumped string puppet, suddenly yanked upright. He moves as if to withdraw his hand, but freezes in place before he can manage it,
like something is ensuring he can't.
I'm dead, Lanjian.
That isn't true. Lan Wangji's entire being balks at the mere idea of it, not just because Wei Wuxian is sitting in front of him, touching him, talking to him. Wei Wuxian can't die. Even now, in the throes of his demonic cultivation that's clearly eating him alive to feed its own unnatural power, there isn't a world Lan Wangji can imagine where Wei Wuxian's presence isn't a part of the very fabric of reality. He can't die. Ever.
No.
Yes. Wei Wuxian's reply is smooth and even, nearly trance-like in its lack of feeling. I died, and your voice raised me from the dead for my final purpose in this world. That can't be true. It isn't possible. But Lan Wangji knows the beloved, infuriating shape of Wei Wuxian's sense of humour. He isn't laughing now.
I wanted revenge, Lanjian. I needed it more than anything. I had it. It was my dying wish. Fulfilled. It's gone. I can go.
Wei Wuxian is utterly emotionless as he says this. Not even the cold calculation of when they'd found him hunting Wen Chao colours his voice. He sounds like...
Depart.
Wei Wuxian shudders, his hand clenching into a tighter fist around the amulet. With obvious effort, he withdraws the jade finally from the folds of silk containing it, and Lan Wangji's eyes fall to it clutched in Wei Wuxian's straining grip. I'm not one of your ghosts, he grits through blood-pink teeth, some life returning to his voice as it returns his gaze enough to glare down at the amulet to speak to it directly. Foolish little Lan, I don't banish so easily.
It's like inquiry,
Lan Wangji thinks in a sudden burst of clarity. Wei Ying sounded like those who speak to him through Wangji, toneless, dead voices converted to notes that only vaguely resemble music, just enough that he can understand their dying wishes, what it will take to send them on. The spirit cursing the amulet must say something else, as Wei Wuxian stiffens and grimaces a little harder. But now that the jade isn't touching him, Lan Wangji can no longer hear it to know what it is that's made Wei Wuxian's lip curl up in disgust. His knuckles have gone bone white around the carving that is once again glowing with its own internal warmth. And before Lan Wangji can stop it, the shadows of resentment twining like a dancer's silk scarves around Wei Wuxian's arms race down his wrists, slither between his fingers, and disappear in lancing bolts of pure black into the little white carving. Between one breath and the next, its internal light is snuffed out, and the jade shatters in the protective cup of Wei Wuxian's hands. The world seems to suddenly narrow down impossibly small around the two of them kneeling there together, and Lan Wangji's voice echoes strangely in his own ears as he cries, Wei Ying! I loved her. Lan Wangji stays very, very still and stares hard at the stranger across from them, his heart caught in his throat. Wei Wuxian is standing straight and tall in front of him, though he doesn't seem to realise that Lan Wangji is there. It's uncomfortably reminiscent of laying on top of a rooftop next to Zhang Wanyin and peering down at the strange demon that Wei Wuxian had become. Pale and cruel, as he'd stalked Wen Chao across a barren room to finish the hunt he'd been dragging on for weeks, an apex predator playing with his food before the mercy kill. He's perfectly still now, like he had been then, savouring the final torment without anything else to steal his attention. A Lan cultivator is standing facing them, there but not in a way that makes Lan Wangji feel vaguely ill to look at. Concentrating on the figure feels like it takes a supreme amount of effort,
but when he doesn't focus, the man's face blurs and shifts, his entire body seeming formless beyond the vaguest impression of white cultivator robes. Long Wong Ji's head swims, and his stomach churns, but the figure is still speaking, so he tries his best to ignore the discomfort.
My sweet Zhou Xin, her family was haunted. The household had suffered tragedy after tragedy. Her parents were desperate for help, but they couldn't afford to pay for a proper cultivator. I was the best they could afford, an outer disciple ready for his first solo night hunt. I loved her from the moment I entered their home. Long Ji turns his attention to Wei Wuxian again, rather than attempting to focus on the ghost of this cultivator, this Lan elder whose age he can't begin to guess. There had been many deaths, so many petty jealousies that became a string of brutal murders among the servants. I fell in love with her at first sight, wanted nothing more than to help, but I knew within days that I would be overwhelmed before I could safely liberate or eliminate the angry spirits. I had to petition the sect for help. Wei Wuxian is still and silent, his hands loose at his side, and his head cocked ever so slightly to the right. He tilts it slowly to the left, but says nothing. I had brought with me a parting token from my parents, a carving they said would bring me luck and safety on my travels. Luck had brought her to me, the love of my life. Perhaps it would also keep her safe for me until I returned. It didn't. In this strange nowhere place, Wei Wuxian's voice is like a tolling bell, the solemn ring of a gong through the mountains. Long Wong Ji doesn't flinch from it, only because it's Wei Wuxian who speaks. The spirit in front of them seems to shrink and flicker for a moment before he can reply. It did, for a time. She was safe, but I died on the road. I don't know how or why. I never returned to Cloud Recesses. I never found help. As a spirit, I could only attach myself to my single earthly possession, in the hands of my love, and do what little I could to keep the angry spirits haunting her family away from her. Ah. Long Wong Ji's heart aches in his chest with a sympathetic understanding. He too would stand as a barrier between Wei Wuxian and everything that means to hurt him, if his Jiji would ever allow it. It explains why the carving behaves as it seems to as well, coaxing the dead into speaking the truth of their final moments and desires before attempting to liberate them, as all Lan are taught to do. She died some years later, alone in her home, driven mad by the spirits I could not suppress. She has entered the cycle without me. I cleansed the house over time, left alone with the ghosts. Others moved in, left again when their fortunes changed. On and on and on. I liberated all that I could. You can't liberate me. This somehow rings even more loudly. Long Wong Ji still doesn't flinch. You are the most persistent, the spirit says, with some vague hint of something that may be amusement, or perhaps irritation. His more human emotions are too faint after so many years as a spirit for Long Wong Ji to tell. However, you have died, and to keep living is as unnatural as those you command. You must lie down and take your turn in the cycle. Pretty rich, coming from a dead man. Your desire to live for those you love is admirable. Your insistence on disobeying the laws of nature to accommodate your stolen core and continuing to walk among the living is only hurting those you wish to comfort. Stolen core? All at once, Wei Wuxian has gone completely stiff, his hands crooked into claws at his sides, though he makes no move towards the spirit. What was freely given cannot be considered stolen,
he snaps in the same tone he uses when Long Wong Ji is attempting to talk to him about the exact same concerns. I gave it away willingly, and now my cultivation protects them. You may be older, but I have the weight of centuries of death and anger behind me. I won't be moved. I know. And to have angered the demonic Grand Master, with his armies of the restless damned, will of course be the end of me. The spirit replies, implacable. For the first time since they entered this strange place, he raises his gaze to look over Wei Wuxian's shoulder, straight into the very core of Lan Wangji's soul. But your love deserved to know how you died, before I could allow you to destroy me. Wei Wuxian whirls around, eyes wide, and Lan Wangji finds he can't stand to meet his eyes and see the wild-eyed panic there. He drops his own gaze down to Wei Wuxian's hands twitching at his side, an aborted motion towards his belt, where he always keeps his new blackened flute that's become the terror of so many on the battlefield.
Wei Ying.
Far from the tolling bell of Wei Wuxian's voice, to his own ears, Long Wong Ji sounds soft as velvet, not in the least commanding or impressive. It doesn't have to be. Wei Wuxian shudders from head to toe and drifts a few steps towards him. Not in the horrible, dragging way he'd come to him after the last battle, apparently drawn to him by the lure of the amulet, but turning towards him like a flower to the sun, bending and swaying closer as if he needs to live. As if he needs to live. Between one breath and the next, the sort of nowhere place disappears like it never was, and after the briefest sensation of falling, Long Wong Ji opens his eyes to find himself staring at Wei Wuxian kneeling across from him, slumped in a faint over his hands, still cupping the shattered remains of the carving. He knows he should summon Wong Ji, play rest, send the spirit haunting it on his way to hopefully get a chance to reunite with the woman who'd inspired so much devotion even after death. Long Wong Ji knows what he should do, but what he does is reach out with gentle, shaking hands to pull Wei Wuxian unresisting into his lap and hold him close. I died, and your voice raised me, Wei Wuxian had said. Long Wong Ji's bruised and aching heart clenches in his chest. He bundles Wei Wuxian closer, a limp collection of bony limbs tumbled together like bones in a shallow grave, and carefully brushes a limp lock of hair away from his cheek, his skin deathly pale.
Wei Ying,
he says for Wei Wuxian's ears alone, cracking and heartbroken. What else is there to say? Long Wong Ji calls for him until Zheng Wan Yin returns, a surprisingly silent spectre at his side. He calls for Wei Wuxian until his voice goes hoarse, until his limbs have long gone numb under Wei Wuxian's lax weight, until dawn lightens the strip of sky visible just beyond the imperfectly aligned walls of the tent. He calls for him over and over and over again, and hopes for another miraculous return. Sending Lan Zhan away from this nowhere place is painfully difficult. Sending the spirit away is the work of a few viciously sharp whistles and the pure fury of the burial mounds and its wayward ghosts, distilled to its purest form here in this place without physical restraint. He's already metaphorically turning back towards the promise of Lan Zhan's presence, so close at hand, he can already feel him, his touch muted as if through a thick quilt, but solidly there. When there's a yank somewhere around his navel, and he's falling, falling, falling. One more, he hears the spirit sigh, far closer at hand than he should be over Wei Wuxian's shoulder, a scant inch from his ear. One more evil liberated. Wei Wuxian struggles against the pull, the grasping hands trying to force him to rest, trying to save the living from his profane touch. Wei Wuxian snarls and twists and bites and whistles banishing music, harsh enough to rip the world around him into blackened shreds. The hands release him, and he's left floating in the midst of nothing. There's nothing. No pain, no fear, no softness, no relief, no sorrow, no happiness. Nothing at all. Is that bliss? Wei Wuxian pauses and wonders what he was fighting against in the first place. What was he fighting for? Something's wrong. There was something there. There was someone... Wei Ying. Ah, of course. Nothing's wrong. Lang Wangji is here. What could possibly be wrong? Wei Wuxian opens his aching eyes, sensation flooding back into his body in the way he's already come back to life once before. And he smiles.
End of story. Reader's notes. Oh my gosh, that was so, like, haunting and creepy. I loved it. I really needed some angst and some kind of dark, a darker fic, I guess. It's not too, you know. I love it. Also, if, obviously I'm trying to replicate how the author has written the work, but I would highly recommend going back to the actual fic, because I think the use of space, kind of punctuation and italicized things and bolded things, I think is really well done, and it really works well in its written medium. So I've tried my best to replicate it, but I think nothing beats a written format sometimes. But yeah, creepy. And to think it's kind of awful that, well, not, I mean awful in the sense of, you know, feeling emotions, that if Lan Zhan hadn't picked up that thing, if that, like, statue, then Wei Ying wouldn't have gone. But then, I mean, the implication is that at the end, that Wei Ying comes back, right? That he's some kind of, he's like a, what are they called? The corpses that he raises. I wonder if he's still, like, Wei Ying, or it's, because clearly, at the end, when Wei Wuxian is speaking, but it's very, like, monotone, I don't know whether it's kind of saying that Wei Wuxian isn't really himself anymore, even though he's dead, even his soul isn't really the same. I think the kind of theories that can come up from this story are really interesting. I'm trying to look through the comments to see if anyone has, like, released their theories and stuff of how it all kind of intertwines. But yeah, really, really interesting. I also think it was very well paced. Because I think it's quite difficult. Well, I mean, I am very used to reading, you know, 100, 200, 1,000 word fics and books or whatever. So I think writing short stories is really difficult to get the pacing of the story and, you know, climax, ending, to have it feel cohesive. I think that's basically, well, it seems like, for me certainly, the hardest part about writing a shorter fic. But I think this fic did it really well. And yeah, this was for day number 16 for MXTXtober, for the word jade. And it was its own character, the jade statue. So I think that was a really good option, choice for the prompt. Yeah, I want to know what the statue actually, like, was. I mean, I think it just says Is it a person? Wait, I know it has the Lan crest. Let me check. Okay, I checked, and it says it has the craftsmanship and insignia of the Lan sect, but it's like it's a carving, but it's shifting and twisting, like, you know, you have to look at it out of the corner of your eye. It keeps moving. So that's interesting how it kind of gives the essence of the spirit a little foreshadowing that comes out later. I do wonder whether, because Wei Ying obviously like wakes up again and he is alive again, he's reincarnated, but do we think it's like in Mo Xuan Yu's body, like in canon? Is he thinks no time has happened at all, but it's actually been 13 years, or maybe it's just like that, you know? I mean, he definitely knows Lan Wangji is there, but then I guess Lan Wangji is kind of close when he wakes up with Mo Xuan Yu, so maybe he felt his presence then, but interesting. I mean, I'm guessing it's like open-ended. Everyone, you can deal with it how you want to, you know? But yeah, this was a really great story and I'm glad I picked it. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. Please go back to the original fic if you enjoyed it and give kudos/comments and tell them how wonderful they are. And yeah, thank you again to Eleanor_Phoenix for having blanky permission to podfic their works. And I will see you all for my next prompt and podfic.